Hi, I'm Barbara O'Brien. I'm an animal trainer and photographer, and I'd like to welcome you to The Empathetic Trainer. I had the opportunity to speak with Deborah Schneider, who is an AKC obedience judge, owner of a dog training school in Woodbury, Minnesota, and also an animal communicator. So welcome, Deborah. Thanks for coming. I really appreciate you being here today.
Oh, it's going to be fun.
I have to admit, we've known each other a long time. I mean, we go back so many dog years, it's embarrassing,
yeah.
Right? You know? I was going to think how many dog lives, like how many dogs I've had since I've met you, you know, and I was going to say four or five, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, a long time. I was just starting out. You were just starting out. And I got to say, the dog world has really changed in those 20-some years.
Yes, it has. It most definitely has. It's changed for the better.
We can only hope.
Okay, for the most part. I mean, there are still folks that hang on to some thoughts, but a lot of more positiveness, more, you know, what trying to get a relationship going, those kind of things. That wasn't thought about when you and I first met.
Oh, no. It was you, my way or the highway.
Yeah.
And it was all about dominance.
Yes.
And I got to be the pack leader.
Yes.
And there was even people that we witnessed would do physically bad things to dogs that you would be like, you know, unthinkable today.
Right.
But, you know, think about how people used to hit children, too. So hopefully the world has changed.
We're trying.
Right? Okay.
We can only do our little corner.
Yeah, right. But I'm really curious. And we're going to talk about the animal communication part
right.
a lot because most people don't seem to think they have that ability, right?
Right.
And so it's probably something really special because you're in tune to kind of a world that maybe we're capable, but we don't know how to tune it in.
Right.
It's true, animals are tuned into us. I mean, they know exactly our body language. They know. It's our job now, I think, to communicate back. So I want to know, first let's start about the earliest dog thing. I mean, how did you even know that you liked dogs? What was the first dog? Tell me about when you were young and kind of bring me through your life a little bit.
You know, it's kind of funny. I am an only child. So what that meant was I spent a lot of time alone with the family dog,
mm-hmm.
and she did a lot of things with me. I spent a lot of time with Cindy. Not that I was some lonely child, but being an only child, you go up to the cabin for the weekend. Cindy, our dog, was my friend. And so when I look back, that's where it all started, because I looked at her differently than just the dog. She was my buddy, and she lived a long time with me. I mean, I think I was 4 when they first got her as a puppy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I was like 16 when she left.
So a nice long time.
Nice long time with this girl. And at the time, it wasn't like I knew I was intuitive. I just knew that I had this fabulous relationship with this dog, but I was too young to know, what is it? So that's where it started, I swear. Being an only child made me kind of look at things differently. I mean, I didn't have siblings to chatter to. So like you said, I talked to her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I started. And so from there, I started to notice that there was a lot of times when I would get a little what I call an intuitive hit, and it would get me out of trouble.
An intuitive hit. I like that.
Yeah, like it would just say, you know, you need to maybe not do that. And when I'd find out later, it was good I didn't do that. And it would be little things.
Mm-hmm.
And I carried that with me through 3M when I was working at 3M. Got me out of a lot of trouble with my bosses.
I'm trying to understand. Could you, I mean, I just explain, you know, a little bit more for me what you mean by an intuitive hit, how the dog helped you with the corporate world. I'm trying to just grasp how that works.
Yep. No. What it did was she sort of lit the fire a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. So when I was with Cindy, I got to understand her without really knowing that this was opening up my mind a little more.
Okay.
And so then once I got a little older, she was gone. My life's kind of started to take, you know, I mean, I'm getting married and I'm working at 3M and it was just, there was just these things that I started to pay attention to that at first I just thought I was lucky. Like, doesn't everybody do that? Don't you always get told?
You're talking about how animals are talking to you in a sense.
Right.
Okay.
So that's how it started, was that I could pick up on things that way.
At the time, you weren't really aware that this was this wave mm-hmm. of information or this feeling or intuition, you said?
Yeah, intuitive hit.
Intuitive hit. I like that word. This hit, at the time, it seemed normal because that's all you've known.
Right.
And it maybe did what happened. You mentioned to someone else and they go like, well, that's weird or Is that what happened? Like, you became aware it was different because other people said it wasn't happening for them.
Right. And it worked for me so well that I just accepted it. And so it's interesting when people talk about being intuitive. I think all of you, everybody has it. It's just being aware that it's there. And most of us aren't aware. And I really didn't know what it was until I was in my 30s.
Okay.
So I lived with this stuff. And then dogs came to live into my life. Married. At one point, we had 6 dogs in the house. Mm. It was crazy. And kids. But that's when I met a friend who was a very highly psychic girl. She could do readings on people, and she was a great friend. And she and I decided we should try dogs.
Ah, okay. So we're going to channel this energy now.
Yes. And the two of us started reading together because I used her as support because I didn't trust myself, which I should have, but, you know, I'm brand new. And she was very good at it. And we each brought a different piece to it. She was very intuitively about medical issues, and I was more intuitive about feelings and, you know, some past things or what was bothering him. And we made a great team. So I did that with her for a number of years. And then we both decided I should go solo.
Okay.
And since then, I've been going solo, and life is fine.
Yeah.
It is funny, when I train dogs in a classroom, I have to, like, mentally shut the door.
I was going to ask you that. I felt like if you walk into a room of, you know, 15, 20 dogs, because I've been in your obedience classes, and you're training the people is what you're doing, which is great, because that's great for the dogs. You're training the people how to be around their dogs. And so there's a lot of noise and a lot of confusion, and there's 15, 20 very different dogs, and their energy levels and what they're feeling at the moment is way all different.
Right.
Someone might be scared, someone might be excited, someone might be bored, you know, the dogs. So I would think it'd be like a crowded room, like in a schoolroom with children. You have to kind of go like, okay, we're going to focus now.
Yeah. So. I learned quickly. I can actually remember the first time I realized that I was, way too open, and dogs were like trying to peek in and talk into me. And it was when I was judging dogs for obedience.
Wow.
And I just didn't realize at that time that I needed to shut things down. And all these dogs would march into my ring to do their obedience for me while I'm scoring. Yeah. And they'd all be walking around staring at me.
Because they could feel that
And they would be throwing things out, and I realized everybody would leave going, our dog just loves that judge. What's going on with that judge? So after about the 6th dog, I kind of caught on.
What were they doing? They're going like, pick me?
Well,
I mean, was it like that?
No,
did they know their job? I'm trying to understand.
Because they understood that I could receive them.
Okay, so it wasn't about what they were doing, because obviously that would make no sense to a dog. We're just walking in a circle getting yummies or shaked behaviors.
Yeah, right. No, so. it was about the fact that they were so surprised that I was open and I could hear them.
We've seen that with people who intuitively understand horses, and the horse just gets transformed the minute that person takes the lead rope and just breathes. You know, Warwick Schiller and other horse trainers are like that, and that's what we're all trying to understand and learn ourselves.
Right.
Which is why we could learn from you when it came to the dogs. That's so interesting.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
that
you had to
say
that.
They know. And I learned I was way too open, which isn't a good thing. When you're intuitive, it would be like leaving your back door wide open at night when you went to bed. You just got to be careful. You got to close it up and make sure you're safe. And so I started shutting doors, and, you know, I wouldn't interfere. They still knew. But they weren't as like that.
Oh, that's so interesting. Okay.
But, you know, the other thing is, when you're talking about, you know, trainers for horses and how it's the exact same thing for dogs. When I take an unruly dog in class, a naughty dog, I like to call him naughty because naughty in my world is good. and owner can't handle him and I bring him out. Part of being intuitive is to know when you need to shift your energy. And when you start to pick that up, I always make it easy for my folks, you know. I tell them, put all your energy in your feet.
Same thing with the horses, you know
put
that.
Put all your energy in your feet, breathe, be calm, and stay focused on what it is you want, not what is happening in front of you. It doesn't do you any good to get all wound up about what. Let them work out what they need to work out while you stand there, and then start to move forward when things look clearer. But that's my first lesson for folks when they're trying to, you know, well, how can I read or how can I do this? I want to do it. And I do have a class for an introduction to this class.
So what you're saying is that if a person is open and first of all, a person has to like get over the practical thing, like not possible. They have to like open their mind to the realms of possibility, put no limits on the universe, right? So that's a whole person thing. There's some people are very practical and can't, they can't see it with their own eyes. They're not going to believe. No. And that's a sad place. But anyway, nonetheless, when they are open, you know, then they just have to, because you mentioned to me a while ago when we were talking about this, you know, years ago, I've never thought of myself being able to do what you do in that sense. Now, as an animal actor trainer, and I've done that for as long as you've been doing this, I can understand what an animal is radiating when he's on set, if he's having a good time or not. Like, we do auditions, you know, and we'll see 30, 40, 50 dogs in a day, very short period of time, and some of the dogs come in, and this is the best game in the world, and they're having a blast, and we can feel that, right? Other dogs come in, and it's anxiety-causing, and I see it, and I go, that's great, thank you, you know, wow, your dog is wonderful, and the owner's like, no, he's fine, and I know, you know, he is not fine. I can't tell you what he's thinking or saying, but I can tell he is not fine. You're just based on body language alone and the feeling I'm getting from him. But I never thought about it until we talked about it again. And I went to, I visit different horse barns for different reasons. And I went to a particular place and the horses were extremely well cared for. I mean, there was, you know, in that horse world, maybe not as much outdoor time and the natural social life that horses crave, but physically, they were very well cared for, but it was what we call a commodity barn in the sense of these horses were extremely very expensive, well cared for, you know, whatever, cream of the cream, and they were used for a particular sport. They were the unhappiest horses I've ever met, and I felt it, and I was there just photographing, doing some stock photography for myself. It wasn't a client. I felt it so overwhelmingly. It never happened this way before. And I felt that the sadness was palpable. And I said to Kevin, my husband who works with me, I said, we have to leave. I can't even be here. And I'm not an overly, you know, I can handle things. I'm pretty laid back. It was hitting me in waves, the sadness. And I'm not, and they're nothing ill, not inhumane. Don't get me wrong. No one was being inhumane in the typical sense, what we think of. Go to a completely different barn. Same thing. High dollar horses. You know, I was down in Florida shooting for animal feed client. These were eventers, so really high level, Olympic level, you know, that Olympic famous trainer. Her barn, similar idea in the sense of the most best facilities, best food, best pasture. Those horses were as happy as could be. And I felt it, and they were joyful, and they got out every day. They had turnout. The girls that were taking care of them loved them, and they loved the girls. And I, you know, there wasn't a horse there that made me feel he was unhappy. And so this person was doing, in my mind, everything right for the circumstance, for the sport they were doing, you know, versus this other sport or other group. It's still about money in the end for the owners in some respect. I mean, everybody loses money on horses. Let me start there. But for instance, you know, there's a reason that they have these $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 horses, whatever. Those were as happy as any backyard horse I've ever met with in more social, you know, environments.
And I'm going to interrupt you. You knew it.
That's the thing.
So
it hit me. It hit me in waves.
What do you think that means for you? What do we call that? You're intuitive. An intuitive hit. And the thing is everybody receives it differently, and the animals give it differently. So when I read a dog, you know, I have to kind of poke around to see where is your level of communication. How old of a soul are you? Are you able to just have a talk with me? Or are you only able to send me pictures or emotions? You got what we call kind of that group thing where they were all feeling this. So it was just one of those, it was so strong that you're sensitive enough that you walked into that and said, and picked it right up. So when you tell me that you can't do this, I'm going to use my grandma's word and say, malarkey.
So everyone, if they're open, if they're open with some real deep, you know, thinking about it, being open, that's possible.
That's really what it is. Yeah. See, you know, there's a little bit of a gift thing, but because like I know that my mother was a little sensitive and my grandmother kind of goes back a little bit. I don't think we were witches at Salem or anything, no witches here, but it's something because it's energy. And everybody feels energy. It's just how you receive it.
I remember a while back when you had been on a trip and you came back and you said, I got to tell you about this llama. And you know I have a thing for llamas. So you told me about this llama. It was in the Andes Mountains. I'm like, what the heck are you doing there? But, you know, I mean, I hardly leave the United States, probably never. But anyway, so I'm amazed. I want to hear something happened.
Yeah, it did.
That changed your life
with
a llama in the Andes Mountains.
Yeah.
Not a normal experience for everybody. So we're curious.
Okay. So this is fun.
Yeah.
I went on a spiritual quest kind of thing with this group of intuitive people. And it was like 12 of us. And we went to Peru and we visited a number of places in Peru. And we ended up one day up in Machu Picchu, which most people know it's an old ruined city, and it's way up high in the mountains there.
Wow.
And the ruins, you could walk along, but it was kind of like you had only so much space to pass another person while you're walking the ruins and looking down into this beautiful, what I think used to just be some sort of sport down there.
Okay.
Like an arena thing. Well, there was a whole bunch of llamas down there eating away, having a good time.
Do they belong to somebody?
Yeah, they just stay there. They're just there. What they are for the Peruvians is that they are their lawnmowers.
Oh, okay.
And they keep all the jungle out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
They eat it all.
All right.
It was really cool.
Everybody's happy.
I know.
All right. So you're up high.
So we're up high. We're just there. And we're going somewhere. We're moving along. And the other people are moving. And all of a sudden, this white llama starts coming down from above a little bit. And he's really moving. I mean, he's pushing people off to the side on this little pathway.
Yeah, because they're big. I mean, if you think about it.
Oh, they're big.
Llamas are tall and big and powerful if they want to be.
Yep, and he's moving along, and everybody's like, oh, no, what's he doing? And I went, I don't know, but he looks kind of cool because he'd been down in that pasture area or whatever you want to call it, and I was captivated by him.
You felt something.
So I saw him before this happened, and so he's coming down, he's rushing. He gets to me, and he stops.
I've been around llamas,
yeah.
And if they're not happy with you, it gets some serious damage.
I didn't know anything about what they could or couldn't do.
Okay.
I just was so excited that he came. And he stopped and he looked at me and I looked at him. And there was this really cool feeling of, yeah, I understand that you find me kind of fascinating. And I did. And it was just this real neat energy back and forth.
Wow.
And then he went on his way at a much slower pace. He was in this big hurry to get to me, I guess.
He's curious.
And what was so interesting was these llamas, they are very sensitive to us. They've been around a long time, too. Here in Peru, they've used them a long time they domesticated them, and they, you know. And so it was interesting that this llama knew that I found him fascinating, and he was insistent we were going to meet. And we did. We had a proper introduction. And then he went on his way. And it just made me feel like everybody around was like, are you going to be okay? Well, what happened? I went, nothing. I just had a little chat with a llama. And it was fun. So that was one of those unplanned things. It's
right.
Not like
no one
he
said,
gave
please
me,
go read my
yeah,
llama.
No, you know? He and he didn't give me any big message. But what he did for me was realize that, you know what, folks? You might want to be careful what you're thinking out there when you're around an animal. Because they might be hearing you.
Oh, they that's might, true.
Because I don't know how. He was the only one out of the group that I actually looked at him a lot from up above. I thought, you're fascinating. And then he disappeared. No, he was on his way.
He's trying to find you.
So that was the llama story.
I love that.
I know. Isn't he cool?
Yeah.
He was very cool.
It's pretty interesting. So what the people around you had misunderstood his intention.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So because they thought that you could have been threatened. Actually, as an animal trainer, I would have went like, whoa, hey, son. Hey, easy, son.
Yeah.
And he would have felt that from me. You were, because you didn't know any better.
No, I didn't know any better.
You know,
no.
It's like, you know, is that an alligator? I want to go pet it. No, thank you.
You know,
so I, you know, whatever. But not, I mean, llamas can be very, very, if they're handled well, of course, they're wonderful.
Nothing, yeah.
I mean, they are, right? But also like any large animal, you know, if you get in their way, they can walk on you, they can hurt you. So,
yeah,
that's something. Yeah. So were there other animals you'd come across?
There was one more.
Well,
there was a lot of them. I don't mean to interrupt you, but there were a lot of experiences in Peru with varying animals, which was, that's one of the reasons I got to go along, because I was the animal communicator.
Okay.
So they wanted me along. So we're in the train. We're in a train, and it's going along an edge, and it's going through a little town, but there's a little road right below it, and there's this horse running. Loose,
huh?
As fast as he can go, and he's running up alongside the train.
He's parallel to the train,
mm-hmm.
Like in the Western movies,
mm-hmm.
Where they're
and he's running
train robbers,
as fast as he can go. And everybody, my group especially, are on the window going, "Oh my gosh, Deb, talk to him. He's scared. Look at him.
Talk to him.
Yeah, talk to him. I think he's going to hurt himself. Blah 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 blah." And I looked out and I said. And I don't know exactly what I said to him, but I remember kind of going, "Dude, what are you doing?" And he goes, "Having fun." He was having fun. Running with the train was a gig he did every day.
Yeah, he was acclimated.
He showed me that he did it every day, and it was great fun to run as fast as you could.
And he probably enjoyed the confusion of the people.
I don't know, but that's, you know, where one of those things where we were talking how we
could be misunderstood.
Yes, we misunderstand these cues. We put our human emotions on them.
Yeah.
Okay. And right away we think that it's bad.
But he was having fun.
He was
you,
having
I
fun.
Believe you completely, because I was just reading a different post on Facebook of one of the animal communicators I follow.
Mm-hmm.
And she's talking about horses, right? And somebody was, there's always the people who don't quite get it or don't want to, you know, aren't there to believe it, whatever. And they're like, "Oh, that's just, you know, garbage and da-da-da. My horse wouldn't say it in that." They don't talk like that.
Right.
Now, when you said, "I'm having fun," that is exactly how some of the horses were talking to her.
Ah.
And kind of that playful,
mm-hmm.
You know, "That's because I like to."
Yeah.
A very more simple, you know, not that complex a thought.
Right.
So when you just said, "Having fun," it resonated with me that this is, you know, very believable, even based on the other horse communicators who you don't even know what I'm talking about. So it's not like you discussed it.
No.
That's pretty cool. Horses must, as on the whole, have this kind of, if they're happy, have on the whole kind of a, why do they look so happy when they're running around and feeling great about themselves? I mean, you know, I wanted to come back as a horse when I was a kid. I should be a horse. You know, I wanted to be one. So I get that. So with, so misunderstanding animals is a, that's the basis of all the problems that we're having, because as human beings, we barely understand each other.
Exactly.
So understanding animals who can't communicate in the, you know, verbal language that we understand, the whole goal is for us as we continue to move forward as empathetic trainers and owners of our pets, is to help break through those misunderstandings.
Right.
So dogs is your world.
Yeah.
Okay, so what, when it comes to misunderstanding dogs, maybe you could fill us in so that we can learn with our own animals. You know, I've got my two border collies and my collie mix. I'm sure there's things they try to tell me, you know, like Lassie, "Billy's in the well," you know. Well, they do tell me, you know, "The sheep, it's time to do the sheep," you know. But I probably miss a lot, or I misunderstand. As a dog owner and lover, you know, what can someone like me or someone in our audience who, you know, does my dog even like me? I mean, do we want to know? Does he really, or is it just the food, you know?
It's so funny you say that, because when I do readings, I always have them make out some questions they want to ask, and I tell them, kind of hold on to them until the very end, because in essence, as I'm reading along, I can usually answer all those questions before you even ask them. But that's a favorite of them to ask, is he happy,
mm-hmm.
and does he like me or love me?
Mm-hmm.
And those are things you already know. See, people already know this answer. And if they didn't know it, then really you aren't paying attention to your dog. Because if indeed they didn't like you, you would know.
Because
they live in the present. And so, you know, if he's growling or snarling or doing something like that to you, then we need to talk. But, you know, this is what I'm getting. But all you have to do to be like me, if you want to be, is to simply really look at them. And instead of putting all your human stuff on it, look at them like a dog.
Exactly.
If you understand a few simple things, and we teach this in dog training classes about body language, calming signals, what does it mean when they yawn, you know, that dogs mirror energies that are given to them. So, you know, if you're like all upset or tense, your dog is probably going to be right there with you.
Oh, so true.
Right.
When we do animal actors, and I don't keep all these dogs at work, I hire people and their dogs. We find that the best thing to do is please give me your lovely dog and I'll take him on set.
Exactly.
And you please go wait over there because they bring so much anxiety. I hope my dog behaves and I hope it. And the poor dog is going, what? And another funny thing, just briefly about how they read us, even though we're not reading them.
Oh, yeah.
I had a dog, an Australian Shepherd, and her name was Kylie. And it was owned by a lovely lady named Kathy. And Kylie was a beautiful dog, and we used her for many years in all kinds of ads and commercials. And Kathy would come on set and work with me and the dog. And it was great because Kathy was a good trainer and wasn't anxious, and everybody was having fun. Then we found out, sadly, that Kathy had breast cancer. And she had gone through some of the chemo and the operations and things that were going on. And she came back kind of semi-recovered, but not quite herself yet, you know, as best she could. And I went to take her dog and go do the job. And normally I could say to Kathy, you know, stay back here and over here out of sight and I'll work with you. Her dog could not do it. Her dog could not work. And I was trying to grasp what has changed because this dog is always fun. And I don't ever make a dog work that's not happy.
Right.
Because A, it's not nice. It's not nice to the dog. And B, you're not going to get a performance. So I only want dogs that are really having a great time. It's got going, you know, the best day in the world to be with me because it's all yummies and we're going to play and whatever. And it occurred to me, oh, she can't leave mom. That's her job right now. Her job right now is to be with mom, comfort mom. It's all about mom. And so then I brought Kathy back closer, and she said, it's okay. Let's have fun, you know, and we wrapped up the shoot, and it was great. But the dog knew, I got to be with mom, you know. And then another case happened a couple summers ago. A good friend of ours, Tom, had a toller named Chase. And Chase was a great acting dog. It was a Nova Scotia duck tolling retriever. Great dog.
I remember Chase.
Chase, yeah, he was awesome.
Yeah.
Chase did tons of stuff with us, and we came to do this shoot, and I'm trying to work him, and he's not himself. He will not stay. He won't do anything he normally does. He's not having fun. And we just could not figure it out. And Tom was there, and he seemed fine. And then, we got what we could. We did not force anything, and then it was good enough. And I just, you know, my dogs always come first when it comes to animal acting because you might have your shoot, but I don't care. You know, I'm going to make sure my dog is happy because it's got to be a game. He wasn't happy, so we didn't do anymore. That was that. So afterwards, I'm trying to reflect, what could be wrong? What could be wrong? A few days later, Tom calls me and he says, I have pancreatic cancer. He did not know at the shoot that he was ill or that ill, you know, but the dog knew.
Dog knew.
And the dog knew.
Yeah.
The dog knew something was really
exactly.
wrong. And he was screaming it to all of us. Please, something's wrong. And, you know, but I'm oblivious. I don't know that. I just know it's not, that he's not himself. So, I don't know. When your dog is really different all of a sudden, go to the doctor.
Go to the doctor. Yourself.
You know, because it's like they know before us stupid humans, because he was shouting, something's wrong with Tom.
Yeah.
You know? Sadly, you know, we lost Tom, I think, a couple summers ago now. And then we lost Kathy, too. So the dogs know before we do. So you're exactly right.
Yeah, and that's just what I want people to leave here with when we talk about, you know, the animal communication piece is it really isn't. It's just about being open and listening. And it can help in so many areas of not just the wonderful story of him knowing that his man had cancer. But there's so many other things that if you're just open and you get out of your own head, because
exactly.
ask I always ask this of my people when I'm working with their dogs. I say, when's the last time you asked your dog what he needs?
Exactly. Same thing with
and
horses.
And the answer is, well, my goodness, that's not going to work. He can't talk to me.
Oh, yes, you can, right?
Mm-hmm. And I want you all that are out there thinking, all of your people, I want you all to be thinking that it really is asking them what they need. And you will get a gut feeling. And if you just let your human side breathe a little with this animal,
mm-hmm.
and just breathe a little and receive it, you're going to have a gut feeling of what you need to do, be it training, be it behavior, be it questions, whatever you may, you will get the answers. This, me being an animal communicator, isn't somebody can go, well, I can't do that, so I don't know. I'm not gonna, what good will this do me? Oh, big time. I am a type A, my dear. I have to really push my energy down. I have to really work at not being the too big of an energy in a room.
Mm-hmm.
And doing this work and learning how to be, just be with my dogs.
Yep, the horse people that are doing this say the exact same thing.
Be with them. Just go be with them. Has really, really given me, I'm much more grounded. If you, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not, it's hard for me to ground sometimes.
Oh, but, I hear you.
But being around the dogs, best gig I could ever find for myself.
Well, we've always said horses are cheaper than therapy.
True, but I don't know. I've heard the stories, girl.
Well, I just know that horses keep me
sane.
This is my,
yeah.
I have to have them. And the only time everybody has their ups and downs. The only time I suffered truly depression where I could actually go like, wow, this is not how I normally feel. This is the worst is when I was horseless.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have horses till I eloped when I was 19, yeah. so I could have a horse. After 40 some years, I'm still married, still have horses, so it worked out. But I mean, horses, you know, I didn't have access to them as a child, but I had to be with them, you know.
Yep.
So same thing with the dog. I had no pets as a child. Weirdly so, making
it
up for it now,
so.
Making up for it now. But anyway, without animals in my life to keep me grounded and keep me those things I need to be, I you know, can't function. So I get that we need to be present with them. Hi.
Hi.
Okay, so we're back. We had to go get the pie. So we had to go get the pie because I've decided since, you know, this is our first podcast and we can do things the way we want to, after the show, we're all going to devour this pie, all right? So, but the pie time means that it's time for the questions. Now, you remember when I sent the guest intake form? Sorry, I got to put the pie over there. The guest intake form about what we're doing. I sent you like 18 to 20 questions that you wanted me to ask you. So I totally stole that idea from Warwick Schiller, who's a famous podcaster. He's he's an animal horse trainer and everything that we're trying to understand. He's like really got that going on. And he's got a wonderful podcast. He does this with his guests. That's what I'm trying to say. Anyway, he stole it from Tim Ferriss, who wrote the book, The Tribe of Mentors. So these are the questions. And we'll just go, it's just a few. And when we're done with that, we'll get to have pie. So
okay, that's a good reward.
That's our motivator.
I'll work for that.
All right. So one of the questions that you picked out is, what accomplishment are you most proud of and why?
I think for me, it's a little selfish kind of accomplishment, but I have to say I'm really proud that I made it as an AKC judge. Now, one of the reasons is because becoming a judge at the varying levels, you have to do a ton of work.
Oh, I imagine.
It's years of work. And I myself have always thought of myself as kind of like, get it done fast, otherwise I don't want to do it. And I hung in there and I did everything I was supposed to.
Followed
and
all the rules.
I'm following all the hoops. AKC has a ton of them and still do. I have to continue my education.
Mm-hmm.
But when I became a judge that could judge all three levels and rally, it was a real huge accomplishment for me.
It sounds like it would be because you're influencing all the people. So
and I really like it. This is a little plug for me is that I am told that most people really enjoy me as a judge, which makes me feel really good. So there's that little piece, you know, that I told you, a little selfish. But
There's nothing wrong with that. Don't be so self-limiting. There's nothing wrong with acknowledging that you're doing something well and it's helping others. I don't think that's a problem.
I think it is. So that's the answer to that question.
Okay, good. All right. All right. The next one that we talked about was, what quality do you admire most in people?
I really like honesty. 100%, good or bad, just give it to me. I don't like to tap dance. And so when someone, I call it being blunt, but in reality, it's just being honest. And so I like honesty. That's why I like you, because, man, girl, you're honest.
Oh, but I'm not blunt. If I hurt someone's feelings,
no,
I would die.
You're not. But really, think about the fine line between honesty and being blunt.
I guess so.
It's how it's delivered, of course.
But maybe that's it. Maybe it's the delivery.
It's the delivery of it. But yeah, I really like people who can honestly tell me something when I ask them a question. And so that's it.
But we can all agree that's a good trait to have.
Okay.
And we all work at it, and, you know,
yeah,
it's hard.
Try.
But yeah, that's good. All right. In the last 5 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
I forgot to think about that one. I know what it is. I am making a huge push to try not to be so judgmental. For me, it was really easy to always just sort of...
That's human.
It is human, but it didn't fit with how I look at things now, and it didn't fit with the kindness that I want to carry forward. And so, I mean, I still slip a little, and then I catch myself and I apologize to whomever's listening, and then I move on. So I would say I've made a lot of improvement in not being so judgy.
So kind
unless
of
I'm in the ring judging,
that's a
different
judging. Yeah. So a self-awareness in a way.
Maybe yeah. I'm paying a little more attention to my effect on the universe.
Okay.
On the energies, because they may not know that I'm thinking that, but the universe and God and everybody else knows, and so I might as well start working on it. So that's it.
That's pretty cool. And that's all something we could all be doing more of. And
yep.
Yeah. Kindness is never wrong. So
no.
That's a good place to go. Although I've never thought of you as being unkind. But what is the worst advice given in your profession or bad idea that you hear of in your field or expertise?
Oh, there's a lot. Because there's so many, the training field is so diverse. Just like in the horses.
Yeah.
It's all diverse with good and bad. One of the things I don't like to hear is people blaming the dog for things that they can't accomplish. Or the dog's ADHD. Or the dog is stubborn. No dog I've met is stubborn. It's people. And it's when they attack the dog.
Blame the dog.
And blame the dog.
Dog's fault.
Mm-hmm. And when they do that, that's... I don't like to hear that.
And when you hear an expert doing that, someone that's teaching others.
Yes.
I mean, it's understandable if somebody doesn't know any better and they're open to changing, right? That's one thing. But if they profess it and go, this is the only way, and, you know, that's...
Yeah. No, yeah. And when you tell that to other people, like I had someone who was told she was doing a level one obedience class with her dog. And
a level one for people at home?
Beginners.
Okay.
Beginner class with her dog. And it wasn't at our school. And she told the trainer, I really want to do therapy work with this dog, which means that she's going to take the dog into nursing homes and things and hospitals and visit.
Mm-hmm.
And the trainer said to her, that dog will never do it. Now, she's in her very first class.
It's pretty
harsh. Right away, you know, you've got a trainer that's not supportive.
The next question I want to ask is, what inspires and motivates you to do what you do? What is your true purpose in the world?
Boy, now that is deep.
That's a whole other show.
I was going to say, let's talk deep. You know, I've been doing this kind of work for over almost 34 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize when I tell people that I maybe need to think about retiring, Everybody's like, no, you can't. We need you. And so what inspires me is that I realize that there's a niche for me here. I'm not that typical dog trainer, but no. I fit a lot of people. And that I created it, and it's my baby, and I enjoy it to pieces. So to be honest, I talk big about retiring, but what motivates me to do this is when somebody says, man, bringing my dog to you was the best.
Ah, that's good, because the dog's life has improved.
Yep, and they always, you know, will say, I don't know if we could have kept him if we hadn't have brought him.
Then his life was saved.
And then his life was, so my job, I feel, is to keep dogs with their people and vice versa.
Right. Well, that's a great purpose to have. That's a great purpose to have.
Thank you.
And so, yeah, no, you can't retire. We need you.
I guess.
Yeah. No, that's great. Well, we're gonna wrap up here pretty quick, but I have to ask because, you know, I got to keep track. I got to know where all the dogs are. Tell me about your current dogs.
Oh, my household. We had four, and we just lost a wonderful little soul about a week ago.
Yeah.
A little border collie. She was 15. Her name was Every
wonderful dog.
But now I have three boys left in my house, and I have a 10-year-old basset hound named Cosby, and he did confirmation and obedience and some acting with you.
That's right. He's a hush puppy dog.
Yeah,
and things
my
like
gosh,
that.
Yeah. Yes. And then I have a 5-year-old border collie named Dewey, and he should have a whole lot more attention than he's had. So as far as not neglecting him, he's my buddy. He's that dog that's at your side all the time.
Well, okay? you told me once that dogs make room.
Yep.
Which means when a dog leaves your life, it's kind of making room for the next dog in a way.
Yep.
And so sadly, losing Every is making a little bit more room for Dewey. Like it's Dewey's time.
It is Dewey's time. And our last dog is a bloodhound named Bert. He's 4, and he's actually my husband's service dog.
We trained
him to help Michael out. So we didn't go to any big fancy place. He's obedience trained to the nth degree. We can go anywhere with him, but he picks up his cane if he drops it. He goes, gets things for him. I mean, the dog is amazing.
And that's a hound.
That's a hound.
If you know hounds, that's not typical.
No, and he's emotional support as well for
of
Michael.
Of course he is.
And we have a cat named Kizzy.
That's right. Can't forget her.
Yeah,
Kizzy. Prettiest tortoiseshell out
there.
Yeah,
she runs the whole house.
The dogs know it.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. And so that's kind of my house right now. And
that's pretty
thank
great.
Thank you for letting me talk about them.
All right, it's definitely pie time now. We're getting hungry, and it's time to wrap up this podcast. I'd like to thank my guest, Deborah Schneider, for coming today. And when we devour this pie, and then we're going to go out to the pasture and talk to some horses. We'll see you next time on The Empathetic Trainer.